All right, we are back with our number three, Ingo Swann, and his just remarkable book called Penetration. And I keep going back to that a great website. In 1956, the location, Aristarchus, is that right? A-R-I-S-T-A-R-C-H-U-S, Aristarchus.
The big crater, yeah.
Yeah. Boy, what a year that was for Aristarchus. Violent glare, whole length of northeast wall.
Yep.
And around the east wall, a bright spot. And these are people, 1956 looking at this with great telescopes compared to what they were in the 19th and 18th century. Violet tint, north and northeast of the crater itself. Pale violet radiance, east of the rim. Here's another one. Twilight at south cusp, traced 400 mile beyond cusp. No trace of twilight at north pole. 6.5-inch reflector used. Anomalous dimming of tau and 105 tau before occultation. Blue glare, base of inner west wall. These are very specific, folks. They're not just, there's a smudge up there. These are astronomers seeing things on the moon.
Yeah, that, snow on mountain peaks, things like that.
It's amazing. You know, we have running around the net the alleged comments by many of the astronauts about seeing other folks up there. And the astronauts, of course, some astronauts have denied them, saying they're all made up, they're bogus quotes. You've probably seen them, too. One wonders if they're all bogus or not.
Well, I wonder about everything by now.
The more we know, the less we know. Stranger than we believe, stranger than we can imagine, or something like that, the things going on.
It all gets dizzy-making, you know, after a while.
Yeah, it's kind of like a little kid spinning round and round and getting dizzy.
If you don't know too much, then everything seems really quite logical and rational, but the more you know, then it gets sort of spinning.
That moon up there. There are some people also, Ingo, and I've had them on this program. One gentleman named Rene, who goes by just that one name, lives in New York. Bill Kasing is another one. Between the two of them, Bill Kasing's book is, I think, We Never Went to the Moon. Rene's book is NASA Mooned America, and interesting analyses of a number of NASA photographs, and the argument made that some or perhaps all, in their opinion, of the Apollo flights were in part artifice and deception. Any feeling on that? Might some of those Apollo flights been dressed up a little bit or revised to make for better and more appropriate public relations and so forth?
Well, you got me. I mean, there was that movie called Saturn V or something that was showed that...
Right, the three astronauts...
Or fakes or something, was things like that. But there's been too much scientific commentary on what's been discovered on the moon to a large degree, and I'm willing to accept that the moon rocks are real enough. But what do I know?
One of the pictures in the book, I know, was presented as an astronaut doing a spacewalk, and it quite clearly was a picture that was shown to be an earlier photograph, and that picture was doctored and re-released as something it wasn't.
Oh, the fact that some photographs have been doctored and re-released, that's clearly the case. There's a lot of camouflage going on there.
You get those shadows on the surface in some of the moon pictures going in different directions?
Yeah. I have some friends who tried to get some of Clementine photographs, and they finally were sent some photographs, and they were able to find out that they were 1974 NASA Apollo photographs, sort of sent, the cover-up, you're hinging on the cover-up type of thing that went on there. And, of course, the best way to cover something up, if you can't really keep it a secret, is to put it in the public domain and then say it never happened or that it's bogus or something like that. And then nobody will ever be able to tell whether it's the fact or not the fact. So I don't know. I mean, you know, I do what I can, and I have to make judgment calls, and so I've made a few.
There is a tremendous amount of intrigue going on, more than I think most of us could imagine. And you'll get a look at a little bit of what's going on by catching hold of Ingo Swann's remote viewing experiences, his remarkable story in his book, Penetration, The Question of Extraterrestrial and Human Telepathy. We haven't even touched on that subject yet tonight. We have more callers holding. If you'd like to call in and talk to Ingo, now is your chance. It does rarely appear in the media, and we're very honored to have him here again tonight. 1-800-850-5043 is our toll-free number. 800-850-5043. Francis in Sandy, Utah, listening on KTKK in a great state up there. Hello, Francis. Thanks for being so patient.
Yes, hello to both of you. I'm thrilled to be on.
Thank you.
I would like to ask Ingo about the Foundation for the Study of Cycles. Does he think this is an accurate foundation?
Oh, and this is a marvelous foundation. I used to go to its conferences. They used to hold them in the Briarcliff Hotel in Virginia or something like that. No, this is a very meritorious group of people, and they really, really very serious about their studies, cycle studies.
That's Do they put out newsletters or books or something? Or
oh,
do
yes.
they have a website or an 800 number?
I don't know. I used to subscribe to their stuff until I had to stop subscribing to so much stuff. But they used to be in Pennsylvania, and they moved to California. And
Do you know where in California?
I don't right offhand.
Probably they have a net site, wouldn't they, or some net reference?
Any library will be able to tell you where they're located. I mean, their publications are stockpiled in libraries all over the United States. So,
do they have remote viewers on the staff, or
how are they doing this? Oh, no, no, no. This is too fringy for them. They're very hardcore science. But what they're researching slips over into invisible influences that end up influencing cycles and things like that. These are wonderful people.
Yeah. Oh, sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
Oh, and who's your astrologer that has all the financial information? Can you give his name out?
That's Arch Crawford, and you can find his website in the Internet somewhere under the name of Arch Crawford.
Arch Crawford.
Crawford, yeah.
Oh,
Crawford
sounds business. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Endorsed by Mr. Swann.
Oh, yes.
Now, does he do the ancient esoteric astrology, or has he studied the earlier and ancient books like you have?
He is his own man, but he's a very competent. He uses astrologies to help identify turning points and trends, you know, in the gold market and the stock market and things like that. He's very technical. And he publishes a monthly newsletter, and you can find, he has a website, so you should be able to track him down, too. Where are you in Utah?
I'm in Sandy, Utah, which is next to Salt Lake.
I lived in Tooele, Utah for many
years. Oh, really?
Teenager, and I went to college at Westminster College in Salt Lake City.
Oh, that's a wonderful school.
Oh, yes, it was a terrific school.
Now, were you into psychic things then, or were you just a normal kid, the normal student?
I took a double degree in biology and art. I was hedging my bet in both areas. So
did you have any psychic or intuitive abilities at that time, that young?
Oh, minimal. I had a lot as a child. But by the time I was in my college years, these sort of had been suppressed in a way.
Okay, so these came from childhood and then came back in later years.
Yes, and when I started volunteering to do research in parapsychology labs.
Oh.
Anyhow, good luck on your finding the cycles people. I think you'll enjoy them if you do.
Thank you so much.
Thanks,
I enjoyed Francis. Talking to you.
Thank you for listening. Thanks for calling.
Mm-hmm.
Penetration. The issue of ET, telepathy, control influencing us individually in groups en masse is a very important one. How do we approach that with an understanding that many of the people out there don't believe in ETs necessarily. How would we lay this on the table for them to get a good grasp?
Well, I don't deal with belief or disbelief. I just have devoted a lot of attention to things that interested me, and these things interested me, you know, we have freedom in this country to pursue our interests and to form opinions and things like that. And if these areas don't interest other people, that's fine with me. I mean, you know, we can't all be exactly alike. If you get into the area of, let's say hypothetically, we accept hypothetically that ETs exist,
mm-hmm.
and that they come and they communicate with people or abduct people and things like that, and that these people say, well, most of the communication was done by telepathy. this is very widespread, you know, that people say this, and of course if ETs wouldn't have to deal with the 33,000 active languages on planet Earth, if they could just talk telepathy to everybody, which is a series of images and sign recognitions and things like that, that would be what telepathy consists of. And that's a real possibility.
Yes.
An absolutely real possibility. And we know in our species that we have spontaneous examples of telepathy occurring all the time, principally between mothers and children, sometimes father and children, and between lovers and man and wife, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know it's there, that there's an undercurrent of telepathic.
Right. Hold on, Ingo, and we'll pause and get this commercial break taken care of. Come right back and carry on in about 3 minutes. Once again, the phone number is 1-800-850-5043. From Chapter 24 of Ingo's book, Penetration, the Earthside concept of telepathy. Let me read just a little bit here. In the previous chapter, I pointed out that the modern concept of telepathy has not produced much in the way of evidence for telepathy, much above some very low threshold activity. In other words, human telepathic faculties are known to exist, but with the exception of spontaneous examples of telepathy, it does not function in a high-stage way. And there could be any number of reasons for this. What are some of the reasons, Ingo?
The model's wrong. We have a model since about 1911 that telepathy acts like radio broadcasting, where a sender broadcasts thoughts to a receiver who picks it up. So we have the sender and the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And the broadcasting goes across space, and there has to be a carrier wave of some kind to get the information from the sender to the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
But this model, which has been used rigorously from about 1911, at least through the 50s, never produced much in the way of an enhancement of telepathic contact. And one of the reasons might be is if you ask people that are good at telepathy what they experience while they're doing it, they say that they experience being at one with each other, or being in the same time space framework with each other. They're sharing, they're identical, they're together.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of thing is a quantum mechanics thing, where two identical events can occur separately, as if distance between them doesn't really matter. So what's dropped out in the experiential thing is the concept of distance and broadcasting through the distance. And that would appear to be the more correct model than the radio broadcasting model.
And
if you have a wrong model or a wrong theory in science and it doesn't produce results, they usually throw it out and look around for another one that produces better results.
Usually.
But with regard to telepathy, nobody's thrown out the old model. They still conduct experiments based upon the old model, even though it doesn't work too well.
Huh. Interesting. We're getting a real funny kind of an echo on your phone. Does it sound okay in the studio?
That's because I put it on the speakerphone.
I can't do that, Ingo. Caught you. I wish we could. Speakerphones just bring in all sorts of noise.
Well, I switched it back over here.
Thank you. Now you sound like you're back with us.
Okay.
You sound like you were in the ether somewhere.
Woo-woo?
Oh, yeah. From the backside of the moon.
The backside of the moon. Okay.
In Tampa, Florida is Joe. Welcome, Joe. Listening on the internet tonight. How are you?
Hey, Jeff. How are you doing tonight?
Good. Thanks.
Hi, Ingo.
Hello.
Pleasure to speak with you. If a couple of my questions are repeats or you guys covered it all, forgive me because I just got home and turned you guys on. When you remote viewed for the Black Project on the moon, did you think maybe it was a problem that you were front-loaded knowing that you were already remote viewing the moon? Or were you already experienced enough where you can actually keep your imagination out of it?
Well, I was sort of experienced enough. By that time, in our research project, we'd already discovered the existence of what we called analytical overlay and more or less how to identify it most of the time. And I really didn't know very much about the moon, and I would assume that they wanted something that I didn't really know about anyway. So, you know, I have to make judgment calls, and I took a chance, and I did their thing for it, and it turned out it worked out pretty well. But this process uncovered the real interest wasn't remote viewing the moon, but in telepathy of the extraterrestrials. And this is, I think, pretty well outlined in my book.
And second question, which you might not want to answer, but I think it's important because this person has had a really major impact in remote viewing. And when you trained Ed Dames, did he finish your complete training? And what was your recommendation? Did you recommend that he was just supposed to be a monitor because he had too much analytic overlay?
One thing we don't do is personality issues on this discussion tonight, so we'll have to avoid that question, Joe.
People aren't important anyway. It's the issues.
It's the issues.
That are important, and they transcend people. People come and go, you know. Even I will come and go. But the issues will remain. And so those are what's important.
Have you read the book yet, Joe?
I have not read the book yet.
Oh, you need to get this one. You'll like it.
I know. All right.
Oh. It's a dandy. Any other questions?
No, that's it. Thanks, Jeff, and thanks, Ingo.
Okay. You bet.
Bye.
Thanks very much, Joe. In Hawaii, Glenn is listening, I assume, on the internet over there.
Yes, sir, I am. Good evening, Jeff.
Welcome.
I'd like to say hello to Ingo. I just finished your book. I enjoyed it a great deal.
Oh, I'm glad. Thank you.
Okay. I had a technical question. I'll try to stay away from, schools. But it's been my observation that the remote viewing manual that's published on a few places on the Internet and other doctrine that's out there on methods of remote viewing.
I can tell you right away, I did not write it.
Well, I don't think you use it.
I think
the manuals are a reverse engineering of your probable explanation of how it works.
Okay, what's your question?
My question is, when you remote view, do you have an altered state going where you're beside your consciousness, where you've got a duplicity of your consciousness working?
Okay.
No, the idea that you have to have an altered state to do any of these things was abandoned in our research because the viewer has to stay completely conscious in order to create a record and stay within their abilities and what they're doing. Actually, it's an intellectual discipline that is very rigorous, but it permits this kind of information to be accessed and brought down through consciousness and put on a piece of paper. And if an altered state occurs to the degree that it distorts the production of the information, then the person has to take a break and recover from it and go on. It's in sort of a way, your latitude for altered states is about the degree that you could experience in driving a car. You can only permit a certain amount of altered state before you're going to wreck the car, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's between being acutely conscious and riding a bike. somewhere.
So your mindset is such that that you're intent and determined and focused.
Right. And if you get too altered in things like that, then you probably can't see the road anymore if you're on a bike or car. So this is a well-known activity. It's the degree that you can go on automatic and function and remain conscious and accurate has been psychologically studied quite well, and it falls in the school of learning processes that permit you to sort of occupy two mindsets at once, but the conscious one has to be the determining one at all times.
Okay. Thanks very much, Glenn.
Thank
for the
you.
Call, you bet. And we're going to pause here at the bottom of the hour. Come right back. Once again, let me remind you, the phone number for Ingo's book is 888-453-4046. And we are back. And by the way, let me remind you that Mr. Ingo Swann has a great website. It's loaded with material. And I think we were there earlier, and some of you got there as well. So we'll remind you again, as I'm shuffling papers on here, that his book is available, and a small extract of it is available on the website, which you, by all means, should take a look at. Okay, if you want to call in, we have a little bit of time left. 800-850-5043, and it is www.biomind, of course, superpowers.com. That's all one word, biomindsuperpowers.com. Just a remarkable award-winning website. Okay, we have just about 20 minutes left. Ingo, what would you like to cover in our last couple of segments here?
Well, how about how to become a second-class citizen in no time?
Okay, and the next time you come back on the program, we'll talk about first-class citizens. We have to start somewhere.
If you experience something that you can't prove happened, you become a second-class citizen right away.
That's true.
That's one way to become a second-class citizen.
Yes.
All these people that experience things they can't prove happen or can't explain, you know, they suddenly find themselves sort of in a second-class citizen position. And this includes the whole of parapsychology in terms of the rest of the conventional world, you know. And people who've been seen UFOs, they fall into that category, and it's just really, if you look at it from that viewpoint, people are reluctant to talk about what they can't explain or prove because it makes them a second-class citizen right away.
Okay. Let's go down to Hot Springs, Arkansas, and someone is on the line there wanting to say hello to all of us and ask a question. Who's there in Hot Springs?
No one.
No. Well, maybe it's a telepathic caller. There was a lady there who did want to talk, but she's going to go back and listening. Okay, and where is Brad? Clearfield, Utah. Listening on KTKK is Brad. Hi, Brad.
Hi. Hey, I've been listening with some interest here to your interview tonight, and I guess I was quite interested in the earlier comments of your guest about the fact that there hasn't really been any good clear pictures, I guess, of the moon or of Mars or any of the space explorations. And then you touched briefly on this previous interview you had with another guest, I guess, called Bill Kasing.
Yeah, I had Bill on a couple of times, going back about 2-3 years now, I guess.
Yeah, I just wondered, is there a possibility of getting a tape transcript of that? Or
there sure is. All you have to do is you can get tape of Bill Kasing's appearances here, and you can get tapes of Renee's appearances here. Renee's book, NASA Mooned America, has a lot of very, very interesting material to consider. All you have to do is call for our tapes. And let me give you the 800 number for that. It's 888-456-4340. 888-456-4340 for audio cassettes of the program. Just tell them you'd like the show with Bill Kasing. That's K-A-Y-S-I-N-G. Or Renee.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Sure.
Question for Ingo?
Well, I don't know. I just wonder if he is of the opinion or has an idea of whether there actually was people that landed on the moon, or maybe it was just kind of a publicity thing that NASA was doing to keep the funding coming so that they wouldn't, cut back on the NASA funding and maybe, discontinue the moon probes, or even maybe, cut back in other areas
right.
that they were working at. And I just wondered if he really thinks that there was actual space explorations on the moon or...
Well, everything's possible, but it's within my acceptance reality that they did go to the moon and things like that. It's also quite well known that they stopped going to the moon, and they left three Apollo setups rotting away on the launch pads down there. They just abandoned them. There were supposed to be 21 Apollo flights, I think, or something like that. And they just forgot the last three, which is a terrible waste of money. And if boondoggling America just keeps funding coming, they wouldn't have stopped having an interest in going to the moon. But, there's a lot of chicanery everywhere, and it's very hard to wheedle one's way through it all.
Well, that's true, but, the thing that I think I've always had a question on is if they were able to make so many flights to the moon, I'm not sure what the number was that they accomplished, but if they actually did accomplish that many flights, it seems like that with progressive flights that they would, maybe be able to find more economical ways of doing it and be able to cut down maybe some of the expenses and make it to where they could improve on it, to where they could get better at going to the moon. And it seems like your
space shuttle and the space platform has been even more expensive than the Apollo flights were.
Oh yeah, much more. But it just seems to me that, like with the progression of the development of the automobile and stuff, they just kept developing it, making it better and, more efficient and things like that. But yet it seems like with the moon flights, like you say, they got to a certain point and then just kind of got cut off.
Well, we are of a mind, Brad, that we may have been told to sort of cut it off.
You have to incorporate. See, we liked everything to be logical. We like it to go from A to Z and without any interruptions and things like that. But the more you know about everything involved with space and the moon and Mars and things like that, the more you encounter some very illogical things that just don't fit in anywhere. And it's up to grabs to explain these illogical things, and that's up to the individual, I think. There's no one answer to everything here.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I was just interested to get your viewpoint on that.
It gets really difficult. It really does.
Yeah, I think it does. Well, I appreciate you sharing your viewpoint with me.
Thanks, Brad.
Good question.
Okay, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Okay, goodbye.
And as we approach this last break during the program tonight, we'll remind you again that the book Penetration, The Question of Extraterrestrial and Human Telepathy by Ingo is available at 1-888-453-4046, 1-888-453-4046. Do visit the website at sightings.com. You'll see right down near the bottom, near the data pages, a banner I put in for Ingo's book with a small excerpt from it and order information right there. One of the most unique books in many years. From one of the most unique people in many years, and we'll be right back. We are spending so much time, Ingo, talking about these new and their wondrous discoveries, extrasolar planets. I think there are about 18 of them now, something like that, and more coming all the time. And yet right off our own back door, we've got this moon sitting out there.
Well, the one that's avoided, you mean?
Yep.
The moon that's avoided.
That empty piece of rock up there.
That empty piece of rock that nobody pays any attention to. Why do you think that is? I mean, gosh.
Yeah, it's amazing.
We're being mind-controlled by the ETs to forget about the moon?
Yeah. Here's an interesting little tidbit from the book, and we've touched upon some of these tonight. On October 12, 1954, about 6 years before President Kennedy announced the great American effort to place a man on the moon, one astronomer is utilizing the telescope of the Edinburgh University to examine that moon. He was able to observe, quoting now, a dark sphere travel in a straight line from the crater Tycho to the crater Aristarchus.
Yes.
As I mentioned earlier, with all of those amazing colors and glows and things from that crater. This is a wild place up there. And at the beginning of this chapter, 19, which is entitled Moon Style Occupational Hazards, you mentioned, of course, Fred Steckling and Dan Ross's books. And there's a wonderful bibliography on penetration as well. Their estimates, talking about Steckling and Ross, more or less conclude that dwelling on the moon would resemble dwelling in the higher Andes or the Himalayan mountains.
That's right.
But that healthy and vibrant earthsiders would acclimate quite well to such conditions.
Yeah, especially those with big lungs that are born at... If you're born at a high altitude, then you develop big lungs and you'd be an ideal candidate for occupying the moon. It's that kind of environment.
Just fascinating. I want to mention again that moon site for all of you to go and take a look at when you can, if I can get back to it here in my bookmarks, let's see. It's an official NASA report available at www.mufor.org/tlp/lunar.html. Go check that out and read through it. And as you read Ingo's book, refer back to these 500-plus sightings. And let's do hope that Fred Steckling's son revises and updates that book. I think that would be a very valuable thing.
It's available. Somebody's going to send me one.
Oh, it's out now?
Yeah.
I need to get hold of him and get him on the program.
Oh, yes, you do.
Maybe we can get you to come back with him. That would be fun.
Oh, my goodness.
Get the three of you. We have a couple callers still holding. Thanks for your patience. Our number here in our remaining minutes, and we do have time for a few more calls, perhaps. 1-800-850-5043. Jim is calling in from Little Rock, listening on the signal. 103.7. Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to ask Mr. Swan if he had any information or insights on U.S. preparations for possible military conflict with the foreigners?
With the foreigners?
Yeah, the ETs.
Oh, the ETs. Well, that's worth another book, actually. I think that's sort of been underway since we didn't go back to the moon. One reason is that we were told to keep away. And it must have been accompanied by a very good demonstration of what would happen if we didn't mind our P's and Q's there. And then there's all of this, you know, a great part of the ET activity has shifted to Australia, believe it or not, where the Western nations are developing these super ray guns that apparently they're trying to shoot UFOs out of the sky and things like that. So the conflict, or at least hypothetically, we can say that the conflict has already been engaged in some version or another.
Yes, the battle has been joined, as they say. The militarization of space is ongoing at a breakneck clip, apparently behind the scenes with our tax dollars. Believe that.
Mm-hmm. Do you foresee any heat up in that conflict at any particular points this year?
I don't know. I think that there's a heat up in the evidence for UFOs, though. Learning Channel just did a wonderful three-hour thing, which they're going to recycle in the next 2 or 3 months and things like that. So I think it's getting a little bit harder for the cover-up people to maintain the cover-up in some fashion or another. Since everything along these lines, though, is really deeply classified, we're probably not going to have any real access to that kind of information. And I don't particularly like to engage too deeply in speculation myself.
You are still, of course, Ingo. Thank you for calling, Jim. You are still, Ingo, under constraint and restraint about things that you were involved with for those many years.
Yes, but they didn't necessarily involve UFOs.
I understand. Mm-hmm. Are you under a lifetime stricture on some of this material, or is there a fuse on it?
If classified that I have knowledge about it becomes declassified, then I could talk about it, right?
So, oh, there's a safe...
So that kind of thing.
A very safe position to take. I like that.
Well, I mean, I'm sort of a patriot, you know.
It's true. You know, people don't know this.
I signed security oaths, and I don't see any reason to disavow my own agreement to those oaths, you know.
You worked for the United Nations for quite a long time. That's an interesting...
Yes.
How many?
12 years.
Were you an idealist at the time? How did you view that UN service?
Oh, it was terrific. It was a wonderful experience, and in those years, the UN was still largely effective. It wasn't the big bureaucratic snafu that it's become lately, and I think it still is effective, you know. The World Forum, you know, the world has to go to a place to talk about their problems, or there's going to be increasing conflicts and things like that. And although the UN hasn't completely done away with those, I think it's eliminated a lot of conflicts that might have taken place had they not been able to go to the North Lounge of the United Nations and have a few drinks and talk it out. So, no, it was a wonderful, wonderful experience, and I loved working there.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, we've got a couple of Internet questions that I've missed, and let me see if I can work some of those in for our good listeners who can't call in. Hi, Jeff. I find the distance of the moon from the Earth and or from the sun interesting, because if it was not so perfect, there would be no total eclipse.
That's
also,
right.
Mm-hmm. Also, that's, does that intrigue you, Ingo?
Well, it's beyond my realm of expertise. You really need to be an astrophysicist to deal with that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But all I can do is read the papers that the astrophysicists produced, and the moon is a mystery. If it comes down to the bottom line, it's a complete mystery. It really is.
I'm wondering, also says Mike, if in some way this is connected to how our consciousness is eclipsed one-tenth, so they say, by our waking consciousness. We have, one-tenth of our mind or something we're able to get to. I assume that's what he's alluding to.
Well, there's been various estimates in the past about how much of our brain power we actually utilize.
What's your guess?
When I was studying biology in school, it was 9%. Geniuses might activate 20%, but that still leaves 80% unactivated, even at a genius level.
You think we might have been... engineered with a firewall built in there genetically at some point, somehow, to shut that off from us?
Absolutely. There's no question in my mind that we're bioengineered.
There's no logical reason for that to be withheld from us, that 80% or 90%.
No, not really.
Mm-hmm.
I think psychics probably can go up to 25%.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are using elements. You know, a psychic still has to use perceptual qualities of the brain-mind neural system, you know, and if anybody who can enhance their perception to engage these things is working maybe 20 to 25%.
Fascinating.
It's a rough estimate.
I understand. Mm-hmm. Velikovsky, Worlds in Collision and all the rest, mm-hmm. Interplanetary orbital mechanics, dynamics, collisions, and... catastrophic scenarios. Intriguing to you?
Oh, yes. I have all his books here. And the one that most people don't read is a book entitled The Vindication of Velikovsky, which was published in the 70s, which is how many of his theories and ideas have since proved to be true, that he was crucified for at the time he made them. So that's an interesting book, yes.
Yeah, he was just destroyed, basically, by many of his alleged colleagues and so forth. We are just about out of time, and let me wrap this up by sort of recapping the particulars of the book, Penetration. You can order it again, 1-888-453-4046. I urge you to do so. It is a self-published work, and it is remarkable. What is the next book, Ingo?
The next book?
Mm-hmm.
It's due in April. My next self-published book is called Psychic Sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
The Biopsychic Anatomy of Sexual Energies.
All right. Well, that alludes to your earlier comment about that being the primary issue we deal with.
Well, it's one of them anyway.
Yeah.
It's another book that no publisher would take on.
Well, I'm looking for my advance copy, and we'll...
I'll be glad to send you one. You've been very kind to me, and I appreciate it.
It's great to talk with you again, Ingo. Thanks for staying up late. Have a good night's sleep, and we'll look forward to the next book and our next chat.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good night.
Good night.
Live from New York, Mr. Ingo Swann, staying up late for all of you tonight to share his remarkable life and his remarkable mind. He is something else. His new book, obviously, is going to be another one, which we'll have to sit down and take a look long and see what we come up with. His website is www.biomind.com. Spell it all as one word, and by all means, visit it. I haven't mentioned Rents World tonight. We're going to do that right now. Go to the homepage and drop by. If you want to leave this reality and go to another cyber destination where things are beautiful, things are remarkable, and things are in your hands, you can actually buy property, so to speak, and build there. You can build anything you want. People are building right now. Some very, very well-known people, some great guests on this program are building there. We'll have much more to say about in the coming days and weeks. We'll be putting up a picture album of scenes from Rents World on the website, too, for you to casually visit. And it's going to be fun. Lots to do. That's our program tonight. Hope you've enjoyed it. And we'll be back, of course, tomorrow night. It's Wednesday already, and that means you know who is here. Michael Lindemann, the editor of CNI News, every Wednesday for the first hour. I'm going to talk to him, and then William Buhlman about out-of-body experiences. William is coming back. And James Fox about one of the best new documentaries on this issue of UFOs and ETs done in a long time. That's tomorrow night for you. So until then, good night, stay well, and as always, good luck.